I hadn't started the book yet, I had just that preliminary thing, right. So here I am with Book Z, End Terminals on the original 19-24 peptide of heterozygote. So I'm trying to find out something about INV at this point. And it talked about Dave, and I have to go and try to think which Dave that would be. It's not Dave at this point, not Dave Pooley. I'll pause for a moment. Yes, the Dave is Dave Gibson, and in fact, we're getting close to a paper which we later published. I'm having a little difficulty in the timing, because the paper I'm looking at was published in December of 1970, and we're in October of 68. It's possible that that was what it was, because there's a paper published then in Science, volume 1, 76, I think. Deletions in immunoglobulin polypeptides as evidence for breakage and repair in DNA, which I'll talk about at some later stage. But this is then Dave Gibson. The context of this work is perhaps best explained by reading some parts from the papers, which one of the papers at least that Dave Gibson and I and Michal Levelon published later in 1971. This sets the context for quite a lot of the work that had been going on in the past several books. Statement in the paper is, we have started an investigation into the structure of light chains of immunoglobulins from normal human individuals in an attempt to answer several questions which have arisen from structural studies on Bence-Jones proteins and light chains of myeloma proteins. In particular, it's important in understanding the origin of antibody variability to know how much, if any, of the sequence variation seen in Bence-Jones proteins is due to genetic differences between the various myeloma donors, and whether the Bence-Jones proteins are in any way non-representative of normal antibody light chain. We have consequently developed a new method which allow us to characterize portions of both the variable and the constant regions of normal individual light chains by, and that means by cutting the light chains so that the constant part of the light chains is separated from the variable part. As the abstract says, immunoglobulin light chains from normal humans were prepared as their mixed disulfides with amino ethane thiol cysteamine from the IgG fractions of 31 individual units of plasma, and then goes on to say about the triptych digests of them were made, etc., etc. Goes on to talk about the INV polymorphism and talking about the light chains of kappa and lambda. Most of the peptides from the constant region of kappa and lambda Bence-Jones proteins were identified in the light chain digests, etc. Peptides corresponding to the lambda chains were identified in all of the light chains examined, etc. And it goes on to talk about what this means. So that's the context of this work. It was trying to understand from normal people what was happening in antibody variability and making sure that the Ben Jones protein differences were not unusual in some strange way. So her book, as he starts with, continues with this task, the N-terminals on the original 1924 peptide of her heterozygote, an INV heterozygote, and talks about Dave, as I mentioned, that's David Gibson. And then more extensive Dansel tests are shown on page 5, just checking still the amino acids, the various mixtures of amino acids, so as to identify amino acids in her digest, presumably. Repeat of the chromatograms, October 11th and 14th, thin layer chromatography of 1924 peptide. Results are quite clear. Silica Eastman is better than Gelman chloroform. Most promising yet on page 17. Peptide TLs, thin layer chromatography, page 19. I'm working with David to get a useful result. Michal Levinon, I should add, was a very enjoyable technician from Israel, and later on, and her husband also, and later on I met them in Israel at a visit much later in my career. I don't remember the exact date, but she was an enjoyable technician and very bright. I think at one stage in here, I don't know whether I'll come across it, that Ellen Panning was also my technician, and they were two of them young women, Ellen, I remember at one stage commenting on her work and telling her that she was a smart lady and this work wasn't up to her standard, and I was being quite cross with her, and she was repentant and worked hard, and later on was very distinguished in her career. She went to she married a German and went to Germany and became a full professor in Germany, so very conversant with the language and smart enough to become a full professor in Germany. At that time, in science, was quite a task, quite a distinction. So again, a grand lady, good people. Large-scale preparations of Clark, Ralph Clark, a little comet Negro, then making peptides from that individual. Pages and pages of similar sort of work. Performic acid series on page 39, large-scale preparations, 41, 42, 43, etc. Not very not very promising on page 45. Double front trouble. More peptides. And so on. Peptides from the basic area of 100 milligrams of Ralph Clark, light chains. Iodoacetamide derivatives on October 25th. It Tavistock always was one of my favourite reagents for modifying proteins. Iodoacetamide, very reliable, and I still use it. Would have lying around in the lab, here and there are still bottles of recrystallized iodoacetamide. There's always a little bit of iodine formed from time to time as it decomposed, and so one would recrystallize it to get rid of the impurities. It was easy to crystallize. Cyanide and bromide treatment. This were later on was used in one instance and resulted in a paper which I think we may come across in due course, where I ran an amino acid sequence for Harold Deutsch and came across a protein that was eventually realized to be the light chain of the histocompatibility factors, and I thought I'd found evidence for reinitiation of protein synthesis after a methionine, but it really was a different protein. We'll probably come across that later. Anyway, here is cyanide and bromide treatment on page 59. Long list of a possible procedure for other recombinant from N-terminal useful for Edman degradation. Technical things. Iodoacetamide on page 63. Separating kappa light chains from lambda light chains actually quite important in the in this general work. That I needed to know whether I was dealing with kappa or lambda. Frank's procedure, 1967 procedure, was used, or was commented on. And then trying to set that procedure up. Iodoacetamide derivatives again, page 71. More cyanide and bromide time series on page 73, 74-75. And going on in the next few pages, the same type of thing being repeated. Cyanide and bromide again. Kappa from lambda on Wednesday, November 13th. Using copper sulfate, cyanide and bromide, page 81. And here we go, repeating these various experiments. Friday, November 15th, no better. Best is clearly hydrochloric acid. Thioglycolic acid treated, cyanide and bromide being considered, and a sketch of the peptides. And cyanide and bromide cleavage again being attempted. My recollection being that, and I'm sure others know this well enough, that cyanide and bromide cleaves in front of methionine. Yes, I just checked, and of course the I should have remembered, but I didn't, that after cleavage of with cyanide and bromide, the methionine is there is a cleavage between the methionine and the next amino acid, so one recovers a cleavage product where the amino terminus of the new of one fragment is the next amino acid to the methionine on the downward side, and on the upward side the amino acid polypeptide has been cleaved, and so one results gets two fragments if there is one methionine. A test, I think, on page 93 is a leucine aminopeptidase, I think, LAP, with Bates as protein. Trying this scheme that on page 95 and the preceding page, they're saying that the conclusion is not likely to work with precipitated protein. I would try again with a new LAP and perhaps a soluble Bench-Jones protein. More cyanogen bromide. Tests the following day and thereafter. Iodoacetamide derivatives, page 105. A new N-terminal method being tested on page 105. Acetylation. And a comment that Michal tested the result on page 105. Michal is not spelled correctly. And continuing to break up these proteins into their fragments and identify the peptide. Nitrous acid, HONO, again, on page 113, don't remember the earlier use of it, but anyway, it is again. Continuing on the following pages. Cleaning up hemoglobin for some not obvious reason on Saturday, February 22nd. Lysate made with wash cells, etc. Deionized pH and ran down the column. Continuing on page 119, something odd with this DEAE cellulose method. top of the column briefly holds up the hemoglobin, and then the character changes and the illusion occurs. Seems likely a pH effect, etc. Now a little bit of light on the nitrous acid experiment, HONO, page 121. General position is that nitrous acid clearly inactivates about 90% of N-terminal amino groups, but can also inactivate the next amino acid during hydrolysis, etc. Some comments of it, with a new idea on the following page. Nitric acid, nitrous acid and acetic acid on page 125, following pages. It was straightforward peptide chemistry, such as it was at the time. Now beginning to use the sequinator, because here we have on Monday, March 3rd, X149/Z90 Bates Jens protein for the sequinator. The sequinator became an all-encompassing beast at about that time, as far as my work was concerned. This was based on a paper published by Edmund that I'll refer to in a moment. Yes, there isn't any particular introduction here to the Edmund de Begg sequinator, but there is a history related to it. Edmund Begg sequinator was published in 1967 for the automated degradation of proteins starting from the amino terminus and cutting off one amino acid after another in a sequential manner. And it was achieved by having a protein in a rotating cup designed in such a way that solvents or solutions could be added to the cup, and because they were centrifuging, you could scoop them out again with a little device at the top of the cup, of the spinning cup. It was a tricky apparatus, but very successful eventually. I read about the procedure, and I heard that one of these machines was going to be built in Chicago by the Illinois Tool Company, of all companies, as a result of their being approached by is the first mention in the book so far of the sequinator. There is a very interesting series of experiments that I did for my personal part of it using the sequinator. That was a procedure for automatically carrying out an Edmund degradation, which degraded proteins from the amino terminus, cutting off one amino acid at a time. And Edmund and Begg had automated this. And Emmanuel Margoliash at Northwestern University, who had a long career investigating the sequences of cytochrome C and their relation to evolution with Walter Fitch in Wisconsin, had contacted, of all places, the Illinois Tool Works to make an updated Edmund Begg sequinator. And probably through Walter Fitch I heard about this, and said I would join with Margoliash in having one of these machines made. And I remember when it came, it was very heavy and about a meter square in cross section and maybe 1.5 meters high, very heavy aluminum body. And when you opened the door of the sequinator, you could see that on the left hand side was an impossible, at that time, an impossible array of electronic cards. These were, in those days, integrated circuits, but they could do they could have very little on each circuit board. For example, one circuit board might just be there to control one valve in the sequinator on command from previous parts of the program. And I remember thinking, this thing will never work, it's just too complicated. In fact, it turned out to be extraordinarily reliable and very good. And the person from Illinois Tool Works who had designed it knew it so intimately that I remember calling him one Saturday afternoon using the machine when it had quit working in a certain way, and I was able to tell him how it had stopped, and he said, okay, look at card number 4 or 5 from the left on row 6 of these, or whatever it might have been, on row 6 of these multiple cards, and pull out that card and you'll find that the transistor in the bottom right hand corner has probably come loose or something. And sure enough, when I got there, the contact of that transistor was bad, and just applying a soldering iron to it and repairing it and back in business. But that's how well he knew the system, that from a symptom he could tell you just which transistor was wrong and what to do about it. Quite incredible. I don't remember his name, but it may come back to me in due course. But that's the beginning of the first mention here of sequinator. We did publish quite a nice paper on use of it, and we'll come to that no doubt later. Paper has some 500 references. It had some rather good computer programs in it also. So going on with the chemistry, we're doing this for precipitating for the sequinator around Tuesday, March 4th, 25 milligrams of Bench-Jones protein, etc., dissolved in formic acid easily and applied to the sequinator, presumably. Or at least it was crystallized. So this gave large crystals by the morning, so it was pure enough protein that it would crystallize. With the problems, oddly enough, of too pure. On the left-hand page, it talks about Friday, March 7th, that's 3 days later, applied to the sequinator to avoid a gel, and does so, a dryish powder obtained, but doesn't hold up too well, may have to alkylate or use DTT, etc., etc. And so on. Dry hydrolysis being attempted. We did eventually set up a method so that the to hydrolyze the derivatives, the phenylhydrazine derivatives that came from the, I believe they were phenylhydrazine, that came from the Edmund Begg sequinator. They had to be hydrolyzed to be run on an amino acid analyzer. And that was a complicated business too. We used to hydrolyze them with hydriodic acid under vacuum in large desiccators. So it was a large desiccator sealed with silicon, not silicon glue, but silicon gel, and a vacuum applied. So here is hydriodic acid, which would be not be coloured, and we'd know in the morning, and we put those in the autoclave or the oven, I don't remember which, overnight, and if things were good in the morning, it would be colourless. If you'd had a leak and air had got in, then it would be brown with iodine, and so you would get a result in the morning which gave you some idea of what was going on. And I'm amazed at the complexity of the system that we were using at that time. And maybe some diagrams will appear in the book to show that. Performing acid notes on Dillon 63 treated in order to get an SO3 minus derivative. Formic acid precipitation, performic acid precipitation on page 113 with little notes. The theory of better acid precipitation on page 145 with a comment, bad. Therefore use IEP isoelectric focusing or acidic form, or dissolve in quadrol buffer. Evidently the results were quite unsatisfactory. Derivatives of Dillon, iodoacetic and iodoacetamide being looked at on page 147, and a performic acid series on April 1st. Performic acid again, etc. Trying to understand the structure of these proteins. And that's the end of book Z.